Are you looking for a forum where you can discuss ACB Radio programming with presenters and fellow listeners? Then you may want to subscribe to ACB Radio Friends. It offers all of the same announcement material you'd receive on our ACB Radio announcements list, but in addition, it permits discussion with ACB Radio staff and listeners. To join, send a message to majordomo@telepath.com with subscribe ACB Radio-Friends in the body of the message. That's majordomo@telepath.com with subscribe ACB Radio-Friends in the body of your message. Keep in touch with ACB Radio, the station that's out of science. ACB That familiar music heralds another Blind Line show. I'm Jonathan Mosen. It's nice to have you with us. Dot bang on the hour of 1 o'clock Universal Time. That's 9 Eastern and 6 Pacific. And if you're not hearing it at that time, then it is a recording. And unfortunately, you won't be able to call in and speak with our guests. But nevertheless, I'm sure it's going to be an interesting program for you. On the program, shortly we'll be speaking with Erwin Hott, who many people will know through their phone calls to Blazy and also through Newsreel, of course. And we're really proud to carry the Newsreel sampler once a month here on ACB Radio Mainstream, so that you can get just a whiff of the kind of things that come up in that three-hour magazine that's now been going for over 30 years, a remarkable history. Then it will be your opportunity to phone in and talk about anything that you'd like. You're also welcome to phone in at any time and speak with our guest, and in either case, the number to do that is a US number, area code 212-812-2800. That number again, courtesy of spiderphone.com, is area code 212-812-2800, and then enter the PIN 0480-5512. That PIN 0480-5512. And you're welcome to call in and speak with our guest at any time that you like. You'll be able to hear the program down the phone. If you're calling from outside the US, you may like to investigate one of the long distance free telephones that allow you to call from anywhere in the world to anywhere in the US for free, such as MSN Messenger, which you'll be getting with Millennium if you buy Millennium, whether you like it or not. Erwin Hott, really great to have you on the program. Thank you for coming on the show.
John, thanks for inviting me.
Newsreel, let's talk about that first, and its operation predates you by some years. Can you tell us a little bit about Newsreel, its origins, and how you got involved with it?
Sure. Stanley Doren started Newsreel, actually, in about 1958. In, I think, 1947, Stanley had founded Pilot Dogs here in Columbus, Ohio. And Newsreel actually started as a way to keep in touch with Pilot Dog graduates. It started on open reel tape, and I think just kind of as friendly correspondence where Stanley might talk about what was going on at Pilot Dogs, and his wife Fontenay sometimes would read items of interest. And it grew from that over the years into a magazine where people could share ideas and comments on what one another had to say. And I think it started out with maybe two or three people getting the magazine and grew over the years. And over the years, it became less and less specifically Pilot Dog or dog related and branched out and covers practically any issue imaginable, for the most part, disability related. And now we reach somewhere around 1,000 people, and it's on a 3-hour cassette monthly, so we're using the NLS 4-track format. And I got involved, well, I guess going back a little bit, it went first on 3-inch open reels, then I think went to 5-inch reels, and then in the mid-70s went to 2-track cassette. And I think in the mid-80s actually went to the 4-track cassette. And I got involved first as a volunteer in the late 80s. I would go down and occasionally at newsreel ran out of Stanley's house, actually, mostly the basement and the dining room table. Stanley really would put the magazine together, do all the editing, duplication, and the family would help, the kids would help, his wife Fontenay would help a lot. And in, I think it was 86, newsreel actually moved into offices in downtown Columbus. It just really grew too big to run out of the house. And I got involved starting in 87, just going down and helping out periodically. And in probably 89, started actually doing some of the editing and duplication, got into occasional equipment maintenance, and over the years just started doing more and more of the actual editing and production of the magazine. And really took that over full time in, I guess, pretty much the mid-90s. And actually, Stanley passed away last year. He retired from Newsreel in 97, I think it was, and I became then officially editor of Newsreel.
I remember the Braille Forum running a glowing, justifiably glowing tribute to him and his work soon after his death. The equipment that you use for Newsreel, it's a very professional sounding production, and obviously you can get a bit of variation in terms of the quality of material that people submit, but that's the nature of the beast, I guess. What kind of equipment are you running there?
At this point, and we've actually over the years upgraded the equipment slowly, but at this point I'm actually using an old open reel TIAC recorder to make the master. Runs at 15 inches per second, so it makes it relatively easy to do a lot of editing, and I actually do tend to do a lot of editing, cutting out pauses, repetitious comments, and throat clearings and so forth. Essentially, I have about 4 different cassette recorders, one of which is actually a very fancy 4-track recorder, which also serves as the mixer that I use. And so I can play the tapes back on cassette and record them onto the open reel machine to make the original master, and then use the Fostex 4-track cassette machine to make the cassette master for duplication. The only adaptive equipment I'm really using are two items. One is an old Science Products audible meter, 2-channel audible meter, and the other is an old Science Products tone indexer. And those are really the only two, plus I should add the Braille Light as a third for keeping track of what I'm doing electronically.
I can imagine that when Newsreel was first formed, it would have been incredibly exciting because it was a way for blind people to keep in touch with one another at length, and a kind of a mini broadcast medium. Has it been harder to encourage people to participate in Newsreel since more immediate communications means have come along, such as email?
From my involvement, I haven't really seen too much change. There, of course, is more emphasis now on technology, probably, than there used to be. And we get mixed reviews from that. Some people love hearing about the technology items. Some people would be just as happy not to hear anything, especially about computers. And that's one reason that I'm very careful when I do Newsreel, when I do a table of contents, to give a complete table of contents and also tone index all the articles, because I assume that most people are not going to listen to every article, and I want to make it as easy as possible for people to skip from one article to the other. So I think the biggest change has probably been the increase in technology coverage.
Do you run everything you get, or are there some things that you don't run?
No, I get between 60 and 80 articles a month, let's say, and we'll usually get somewhere between 50 and 60 articles on the tape. I'm as a matter of fact, working on a fall special issue right now, where I'm using a few articles that I thought were extremely good, but were either not terribly timely or simply too long to fit on the regular issue. So I almost always have enough left over, I'd say every 3 or 4 months I have enough left over to do an entire issue. So there certainly are some things that don't get used.
That's a good position to be in, though, isn't it?
It is. It is. It's a wonderful position to be in, and most people are really very understanding. Occasionally I'll hear from people who wonder, gee, why didn't you use my article? And it's sometimes very difficult as an editor to choose what to use, and I try as much as I can to pick items that I think a majority of newsreelers will be interested in. But sometimes it's the luck of the draw. Sometimes I'm coming down to the end of a track and I have 2 minutes and 45 seconds of time left and I have to find something that will fit, or a couple items that will fit, so something else just doesn't get used at that point.
Do you have an editorial policy? Are there certain subjects that you won't touch or that you think are inappropriate for newsreel?
Generally, I would say that we will stay away from politics and religion, although we did have quite a discussion a while back going on newsreel about disability as it relates to churches and problems people had had, either being ignored in church or ended up sitting by themselves, or some of the really wonderful experiences that people had. So those are probably, for the most part, the things that we'll tend to stay away from, unless they're disability related or unless somebody has a specific question.
So you do have a kind of a debate that sometimes takes place on some of the issues that you deal with?
Sometimes. I think one of the most unique things about newsreel is that it is done in the voices of the subscribers. So the people who subscribe are the ones who send in the cassette. And somebody may comment on several things, maybe talk about 3 or 4 items, and I may use 2 of them, or 1 of them. I may use all 3. I may save one and use it on a later issue. And there sometimes will be discussions that start up. For example, I remember several years ago there was a discussion that went on for a couple issues, particularly relating to somebody had asked, okay, how do you do fingernails? That resulted in a discussion. I thought some really good comments that went on for a couple months. There are many topics such as getting a first guide dog that may result in comments that go on for a couple months. What I was talking about earlier about religion and disability, that stemmed from a question that somebody asked, and I think over 2 months I got several tapes and saved those until I got several comments, and then probably spent 25 or 30 minutes on one of the tracks of newsreel airing what people had to say. I will generally try to put related comments together.
You mentioned that there are some people who really don't like to hear all this computer technology stuff. Do you think there is growing resentment out there, some sort of growing digital divide within the blind community that's causing a bit of friction, a bit of anxiety?
There probably is for some people. I'm not sure that I see too much anxiety. I know I see some frustration. People who are interested in getting a computer but don't have any way to do it or haven't been able to find a way to do it. But I think there are just an awful lot of people who just aren't interested.
And they resent perhaps the idea that it's a cure-all for all of their blindness-related concerns?
I haven't really seen too much of that with newsreel, although I'm sure there are some people who do feel that way.
What's the future of Newsreel going to be like, do you think? Do you ever contemplate taking it to another format like CD, or adding another format like the web as well?
We are looking at starting a website. It's sort of in process, but has not happened yet. And what the website will have at this point has not really been finalized. We may have a way for people to actually subscribe to Newsreel with sending credit card information or whatever. We'll certainly have, I would guess, the Newsreel sampler there. We may have some testimonials. We may set up a chat room. A lot of that is still up in the air. I don't see us going to CD anytime soon. I suppose it could happen at some point, partly because as long as the 4-track NLS players, at least in the United States, are so common, that is the easiest way for us to make Newsreel available, because we can duplicate 11 cassettes at a time. So I can do we usually do about 600 copies of Newsreel. I can do that in about 8 or 9 hours of duplication. So I don't see any big change in format of Newsreel coming. At some point, if NLS goes to a different format that is something that can be done relatively easily, we may switch to that.
How much of your time does Newsreel take up, all in all?
It's roughly, it varies from month to month somewhat, but roughly 100 hours a month is what I put in at Newsreel, so it is part-time. A lot of that is actually just listening to all the tapes that come in. As you can imagine, if I have 60 or 70 tapes that come in, it takes a while to go through and listen to them. Some are 30 seconds, but there's some that are 5, 10, 15 minutes.
What is the process for people who want to leave articles? Do they somehow signify when they return the cassette that there's an article on it?
What we ask people to do is put a rubber band around the cassette when it's sent back to indicate that there is an article. However, we have, from long years of experience, found that sometimes there may not be a rubber band. People may have forgotten. The rubber band might have broken. So we have two of us, essentially, who process the mail that comes back, because many people who get Newsreel are on a read-in-return subscription, so they send the mailer back with the tape in it. So we actually physically check every tape that comes back for a message. That doesn't mean, unfortunately, if somebody's recorded the message in the middle of the tape somewhere, we probably are not going to find it. And that does happen occasionally. But at least if the message is on the beginning of track one, or if somebody has flipped the track selector over to track three and recorded a message at the beginning, we will generally find it. But a rubber band helps a lot.
Yeah, I bet it does. There are a lot of these sorts of magazines in Britain. I was actually quite amazed by how big an industry the cassette magazine thing is in the UK. Do you keep in touch with kindred organizations overseas?
We haven't too much. We have carried occasionally announcements or excerpts from a couple British magazines, but we really have not kept in touch a great deal. We do have a couple subscribers in England. We have one lady in Australia, a couple people in Japan, one subscriber in Saudi Arabia, and several people in Canada.
Oh, that's great. If you've just tuned in, we're speaking with Ewan Hott, the editor of Newsreel, and he does other things as well that we will get to. If you have a question for him, or you'd just like to compliment him on a tremendous magazine, that's fine too. The number in the US is area code 212-812-2800. That's 212-812-2800. A very enthusiastic sounding voice would ask you to enter a PIN, and you should enter 0480-5512. That's 0480-5512, and we thank spiderphone.com for making the technology available to us here at ACB Radio Mainstream. And this program is live between 9 and 11 Eastern on Wednesday evening, 1 till 3 Thursday morning GMT. So if you're hearing it live, by all means give us a call and have a chat to Urban. Tell us a bit about other things that you've done, because you, I guess, have been involved in Newsroom on and off, but not really controlling the whole thing for that long. Tell us a bit about your background.
Well, I actually, the first, I guess, real job that I had, I co-founded the Central Ohio Radio Reading Service here in Columbus, and that was back in 1975, and that was a lot of fun. Stanley Doran was involved with that, and a friend named Fred Allemeyer, who was both have since passed away. And I started working in the control room, first as a technician and then as technical director, and was there up until 86. And that was a lot of fun. I loved that. Ran all the equipment in the reading service, both the live programming, and did a lot of the recording. We had sort of a unique setup. It may not be quite as unique now as it was then, where we had all the recorders in the control room, and the volunteers who did the reading in the studios had a remote control, so that we could pretty easily supervise the recordings and pitch in and help out if people had problems. But the biggest advantage was that we could use the recorders for other things when the studios weren't being used. so that was pretty unique, and it was a fascinating job. I thoroughly enjoyed that for a long time.
You're still involved in it at the moment?
I help out occasionally as a volunteer, but as a matter of fact, I'm producing their schedule right now in Braille for them. But not really very greatly involved at this point.
Interesting the way that radio reading services are going, and I suppose with all sorts of technology, such as even the simple telephone, and how you can select so much information with a touch-tone phone and skim information a little more like what a sighted person can do when they skim the newspaper. Where do you think the future lies for what they're now calling audio information services?
I don't know, because there are many people like myself who are, I think, fairly likely to tap into the information available over the phone or on the internet or the computer. Because if I want to listen to the newspaper at 5 o'clock in the morning, I can do that. Whereas the reading service here, for example, carries the paper between 8 and 11 a.m. and between 8 and 11 p.m. And those times may not be convenient for me, or I may not want to listen to the entire article. I may want to skip on something else. But I think there are an awful lot of people, perhaps older people especially, who listen to the reading service a lot. I know there are people who have it on most of the day and are very comfortable with that minimal use of technology to get the service. The service here in town, for example, there's a association, there's a grouping, the Ohio Reading Service throughout the state, which has started a centrally newspaper by phone service as well. So you can get the dispatch, the local paper here on the service, or you can also get it by phone. And I don't think they view the services as competing against each other per se. The service here in town is also available in several local hospitals, as well as being on the subcarrier. But how services are going to change in the next few years, I really don't know.
Do you follow the debate that's going on about whether radio reading services are under threat by low power FM?
A little bit, and I don't know enough to really be able to form a considered opinion on that. I know that many years ago we had looked as the radio reading service about using the FM channel, which is actually very close to our channel 6 here, which is somewhat equivalent to what is coming about with low-powered FM. And I know that at that time the people at Channel 6 were just totally opposed to any possibility of doing that. And later on there was actually a commercial, or not actually a commercial, I think a Christian station who used that channel, and it is actually being used these days. There may indeed even be some services that might try to use some of the low-power FM frequencies. There, I know, it used to be at least one service in this country who actually did broadcast on an FM, open FM channel. I'm not sure if they're still in existence or not.
Yeah, is the subcarrier thing a hindrance to listenership, to take up of the service?
It can be. It's probably the same type of hindrance that the NLS type talking book machine is, because you have an inventory you need to keep track of. People move or pass away, you don't necessarily get receivers back, and they are relatively expensive pieces of equipment. In downtown areas, particularly, reception can be bad, and that can be a hindrance. I know I listen particularly to the grocery ads here on the radio reading service, what's available on sale at the grocery stores. They carry those on Tuesdays, and I actually tend to record them so I can then listen to them later at my convenience. That's probably what I listen to more than anything else on the service, but just keeping track of that inventory of receivers can be really difficult. And I remember many years ago we got a call from one older person who just loved the music we had on, and the receivers had a main channel and subcarrier switch, and for I don't know how many years the switch had been switched over to the main channel, and that was really kind of sad.
Yeah, absolutely. It's interesting to contrast the way things get done in different parts of the world. For instance, in Australia, they started, and they've got quite a network of radio reading services now, and they started way up above the AM band, which is, of course, now actually a part of the AM band, at least in the US, where many parts of the US have extended it to 1700. And then they got mainstream AM frequencies, and there are even some mainstream FM frequencies that they're using over there.
Yeah, it is fascinating to see the different approaches that are taken in different parts of the world, and it certainly doesn't mean that one is right or wrong or better than the other. I'm always interested to see the differences in how things are done.
So what happened after the radio reading service for you?
That's pretty much when I started on a part-time basis getting involved with Newsreel, and a friend and I actually started doing some Braille production, and I'm doing that to some extent to this day, although not in large numbers. I've done some menus and a lot of local things, and really kind of enjoy doing the Braille production. It's just one of those things that I kind of fit in my quote spare time, end quote.
You have a lot of knowledge about the Blazy products, and I note that when I first got my Braille light some 5 years ago or so, that all of the really tricky questions, you'd pop up on the Blazy lists and answer them. What came first? I mean, did you really like the Blazy products and therefore just developed a natural aptitude for them, or did you kind of come into an employment relationship with Blazy and therefore had to develop that knowledge?
No, and actually the knowledge came first. I did something that I swore up and down I would never do, and that was I bought a Braille and Speak back in 1987, sight unseen. And that's something that I just don't do. I'd heard about it on Technical Innovations Bulletin, and thought, wow, that's something I could really use. And went out and bought a Braille and Speak Classic. I think I got it in December of 87. So it was pretty early on. And got involved from the early days with reporting problems. In the early days, it was relatively easy to call Blakesy and actually have Dean answer the phone. But pretty much got involved that way, and so really started learning the products and doing some local demos and local training over the years, and that eventually evolved into actually starting to do some tech support for Blazy. I actually did most of the writing of the original manual that came with the Braille Blazer, their printer, I think it was back in around 1990. And because the original manual that came with it was on tape and covered all the information, but I didn't feel gave enough explanation to make it at least a little easy for the average user to get started with it. So that I think that was really the first official thing that I did for Blazy.
When you look back at the history of the Blazy stuff, you know, and you look at the features that were in that first Braille and Speak Classic, and you look at what's in them now, and you bear in mind that, you know, apart from memory upgrades and a few things like that, it's the same operating system, essentially the same chipset. I mean, it's a real feat of software engineering that they've pushed it as far as they have.
It really is. It's pretty amazing. I actually have around here someplace the one of the almost original EEPROMs that ran the Braille and Speak Classic, and the early Classic didn't have so many things. You couldn't do an overwrite. If you wanted to insert or correct a character, you'd have to delete the character and then insert a new one. And so there were just so many things. The clock or the calendar was not there. Not the calendar, the stopwatch was not there, the calculator wasn't there, there was no status menu. The growth has been amazing, and very few commands have changed over the years. Lots and lots have been added, so I think it was an amazingly good command structure to start with.
Do you think that because of the way it's been built on and built on and built on, that it's actually become a bit of a complex beastie to master? If you pick up a Braille Lite, for instance, today, that it's, you know, an interesting interface, let's put it that way, that a lot of people who've become accustomed to Windows seem to have problems getting their head around the Braille Lite?
I think for a lot of people, what I've seen is that if people start with the Braille and Speaker, the Braille Lite, and then move on to computers, that tends to work fairly well. If somebody has started with computers, then I think you're right. The interface can be a little tricky. Most of the commands, I think, are fairly intuitive, but so many different options have been added that it certainly can be quite complex to learn how to do things, especially things that are relatively complicated.
If you've just joined us, we're speaking with Erwin Hoss and talking about a whole range of interesting things, and you're welcome to ask him a question or just call in to say hello. You'll be most welcome. I see from the stats that there are a lot of you tuned in, and the telephone number to call is in the United States, area code 212-812-2800. That number again, 212-812-2800, and then when you're asked to enter a PIN, enter 0480-5512. That's 0480-5512. I hear that Irwin's words of wisdom have you spellbound, but you're most welcome to call in and interrupt us at any time and say hello here on ACB Radio Mainstream. This program is going out live from 9 to 11 Eastern on Wednesday night, 1 till 3 GMT Thursday morning, wherever that equates to in your part of the world. I suppose it may not be a question you feel able to answer, but do you have a view about the Freedom Scientific thing and what it means for Blazy, whether it's a good thing or not?
I think overall it's a good thing, although I guess with anything else, time will tell. I suspect that the biggest benefit is that it should make more money available to do product development and come out with new products. At least I'm hoping that's what happens. From my technical support standpoint, it certainly has not made a great deal of difference, but I think we'll just have to wait and see what happens.
ACB Radio Mainstream, area code 337. Hello, you're speaking with Evan Hott.
Good evening, Jonathan.
Hello there.
This is Marvin Rush.
I recognize that face anywhere. Nice to have you on the show again.
Thanks. And good evening, Erwin.
Hi.
How are you?
Nice to talk to you.
Yes. In fact, I think we talked the middle of last week or so. And just I am one of those people who I've been fooling with computers probably 12 or 14 years, I guess, even a little longer. And I just, a week ago yesterday, got my Braillite 40. And it's not, you know, it's not something that it's hard to get your head around. It's just, it's a whole different, I mean, it's a whole different thing. I mean, the only way to me that a person can learn it is you have to treat them separately, you know?
Yeah, it is a whole different system than Windows, especially. The best thing I can tell you is feel free to experiment, try things. Generally, you're not going to accidentally delete files because you do get warnings if you're deleting a file. That's, I think, sometimes the best way is to learn. I think the manuals have improved a great deal over the years, and they can be really helpful. Boise, actually, as I understand it, has hired a technical writer now, and I think the first order of business, as I understand it, will be to come out with a typewrite manual, and I hope after that they'll come out with a specific manual for the Braillite 40.
Right, because there are a few things I've got. In fact, I've gone through the tape manual, which my tapes, I guess, have been dubbed so many times the quality of them's gone downhill, but there are a lot of things that do not apply to the Braillite 40, you know.
Yeah, the manuals, I think, were written in 97, and there have been a lot of changes since then. And I suspect this is a problem that practically every adaptive technology company faces, that when you produce a manual, how many copies do you produce, especially in Braille, how many copies do you produce in tape, and how do you keep the manual updated? Because it's awfully expensive to take a couple hundred Braille copies and say, oh, gee, these are out of date, we need a new manual, and just throw them out.
Right, which I was wondering if that was, I mean, I'm sure that's true with everybody, with any company that makes Braille anything. But, I mean, in fact, I think if my memory serves me right, you emailed me or somebody emailed me the updates email, and I read them, and that helped a lot, you know?
Yeah. I will make a note to double-check and find out if those updates are supposed to be included with new units that are being shipped out, because I suspect that they are. But I'll try to find out and make sure that's being done, because, yeah, I think I mailed you the update 98 and 99.
Yeah, I did. They were file attachments. Yes, sir, you sure did.
I note that I got my 2000 update, and it seems to have the update README files for about the last 3 years for those people who are catching up. And for those of you who haven't installed the 2000 update yet, don't do what I did and go into hyperspace mode, because you'd accidentally turned 2D mode on, which completely changes the way your Braillite looks and feels. But yes, I was quite pleased to see for those newer users that there is kind of an historical record on the floppy disk these days.
Yeah. Which, you know, that's one thing. I mean, you know, and I've gone in, and a lot of people I know that have Braillites, they've not gone to the folder system or to move things in and out of Flash and in and out of RAM, because they don't understand the way it works, because they got their Braillites back, you know, a few years ago.
Right. And I will have to say that that is one of the nice things about the structure of the system, that if you don't want to use the flash system, you don't have to. You can have it completely turned off so it's not apparent that it's there. And for many people, that's what they're comfortable with.
Right, and I sort of feel like, you know, I mean, I've started out using it. I mean, if I create a file, I think, well, I'm not going to need to edit this much. I fling it over out of the way, you know.
Right.
Well, anyway.
I mean, if you're scanning a book, for instance... Sorry, I don't mean to keep you hanging on there. I was just going to say, if you scan a book, for instance, it's really great to be able to either run it through a grade 2 translator, if you have one or not, and then just dump it into Flash, because, as you say, you're not going to edit that, so you may as well leave the RAM memory for stuff that you do need to edit.
All right. In fact, I'm going to be going off to Seeing Eye again, and I plan on at least putting one book into my Braille light because I want something to read on the airplane.
Yeah, I load books into the Braille light all the time. And as a matter of fact, I really had fun when I got my last log in 95 at the CNI. Kind of kept a journal, and I did that on the Braille light, and uploaded it every day to the guide dog list.
I read it.
That was fun.
I read your journal and I really enjoyed it. In fact, I'm thinking about joining the list again. I'm headed back the 28th of October.
Yeah, it was about the time I went in 95, as a matter of fact.
All right. Well, listen, I don't want to take up too much of your time, Jonathan, but and Erwin, both, you're a good show tonight. Lots of information. Thanks a lot.
Thanks, Marvin. Good to hear from you.
Have a good one.
Thanks. Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Well, the lines are free again, and we had one call that was on hold and got tired of waiting, so you can call back now and get straight back in. The number is area code 212-812-2800. That's area code 212-812-2800, and then enter the PIN 0480-5512, courtesy of spiderphone.com. 0480-5512. Erwin Hodd is our guest. You're on ACB Radio Mainstream's Blind Line Show. So you get to play with all these gadgets. You got a Braille light and a type light and a Braille and speak and I forget the other one. You got them all?
Well, yeah, I have a Braille and speak and a Braille light 40, and I should be getting a type light at some point. I think all the Blazing Tech support people will have access to type lights, because it's awfully hard to do tech support sometimes if you don't have something in front of you that you can sit there and try it out. There's nothing like getting a call from somebody who says, gee, my type and speak does this, what's wrong? Especially if it's something either fairly complex or something really rare, it's awfully hard to sit there and say, gee, I don't know why it does that, if you can't sit there and try it out. So I have been fortunate in not only with tech support, but also with the beta testing, to have had access to a lot of the equipment.
Let's go to what I believe will be Steve Matsura. Good evening to you.
Good evening, Jonathan, and everyone as well.
Hi.
I had a question about demographics of the Newsreel magazine, if I could ask you to go back to that for a little bit. Over the years, of course, living in New York City, which, among other things, is like the information capital of the world, everything kind of filters through New York. If New Yorkers don't hear about it, we generally believe it hasn't happened yet.
Oh, goodness gracious
and,
me.
Am I a New York bigot or what? That being the case, I've seen a lot of these magazines. I've read an issue of them, and, you know, I send them back, and it's very nice. I've gotten my sample, and I've gotten it out of my system. Is there a demographic? Is there a typical subscriber of Newsreel that you could talk about? Or is there a subscriber archetype, or a part of the country where subscribers are mostly from? Or, you know, can you talk about some of the demographics that go on with the magazine?
A little bit. We have not kept track of a lot of that information. We have some date of birth information, which can be useful for getting grants in particular. But a lot of that information we don't have. My feeling is that probably a majority of newsreelers are older. That's something that probably, I would say, newsreelers are probably, by average, a little younger now than they used to be. And that's been a way to figure out how to do that in reality. but we did a survey recently, and I don't really have results yet. They're still being compiled, so I can't comment a lot on that. But we got lots of people who love recipes in the Kitchen Corner, which is a monthly recipe column. We had lots of people who skip the recipes, and we had lots of people who love the technology, hate the technology, love to hear dog stories, hate to hear dog stories. Lots of people who said, don't change a thing. So it's really hard to get a good feel for demographics, I think. And the articles that we get are so diverse in what people talk about that I think it's really difficult to come up with a so-called average newsreel subscriber.
Very interesting. I was always wondering about that. It seems like a lot of the talkback sections on a lot of these magazines are always from people from parts of the country you never hear from. I mean, there's hardly ever talkbacks from people from large cities, or there's I don't know how to explain it. And I was wondering if that was representative of listenership or just what. But you pretty much answered my question. There's no such thing as an archetypal subscriber.
Yeah, and I think we have, I know we have, of course, since we're based in Ohio, we have a lot of Ohio subscribers. We have a lot of subscribers in California. I know we have several, I don't know number-wise, but I know we have several in New York. We at one time actually had developed kind of a map of the U.S. and showed the concentration of subscribers in various states, but I don't really remember any details of what that looked like.
Okay, well, thanks very much. I'll continue to listen. Maybe I'll get a new subscriber out of this.
Okay, great.
Even though this program isn't originating from New York, you'll listen.
Well, I'm sure.
And I really appreciate it.
Well, the best stuff doesn't come from New York.
Well, have a good evening.
You too, Jonathan.
Okay, bye now. We're speaking with Irwin Hart, and if you'd like to get in touch with us, the number is area code 212-812-2800. That's 212-812-2800, and then enter the PIN 0480-5512. That PIN 0480-5512. Where does the nice newsreel theme come from?
Actually, one of our subscribers, Greg Brayton, did that.
Oh, God, I should have guessed.
Several years ago.
He's tremendous.
Yeah, he is. He's great.
Yeah, he's a very talented musician, is Greg. So what did you use before that?
We really didn't have a name before that. We use music periodically on the issues. It used to be that there would be music at the end of each track. So, for example, you'd have music at the end of track one and the end of track three and the beginning of tracks two and four. Part of that was that a lot of times people enjoyed the music, but it also was intended to kind of be a way that if tapes turned out to be slightly short, that at least when you were duplicating a tape, you wouldn't lose an article, you'd just lose a little bit of the music. And over the years, I've kind of gotten away from that. I'll still use music at the ends of the track sometimes, but I try to watch the tapes when I duplicate them so that if there are short tapes, I reject them and use them for something else. So I try when I send out newsreel to make sure that the magazine fits on the tapes without losing anything. And it's one of the things we do at newsreel with the read and return is we will actually reuse tapes so that a tape may get used two or three or five or six or a dozen times. That has problems related to it, of course. Occasionally people will get tapes where there's a twist in the tape or something like that. We'll occasionally, of course, get tapes back that are broken. But we've, over the years, have always done, I think, as much as we reasonably can to try to keep costs down, and that's one of the reasons for actually recycling tapes. So one of the things I do each month is erase tapes that have had previous issues on them and reduplicate them.
Given that you've got the infrastructure in place, have you ever considered doing a spin-off of Newsreel, perhaps something to do with technology or guide dogs or something unique that you think there might be a market for?
We have talked over the years about perhaps doing a separate issue on just those types of things, either technology or guide dogs or who knows what. We actually have done some special issues over the years. We've done several guide dog specials. We actually, one lady did a cat special one time for equal time. We have done a couple different specials with recipes, and sometimes do, for example, the fall special that I'm working on now simply because I had extra articles left over. We've had several subscribers who have actually done specials. We had an employment special back in, I think, 92. We just recently, one of our subscribers did a poetry special. And that was actually combined. The first half of the tape was the poetry special. The second half of the tape was a raffle special. A couple of our subscribers do a fundraising raffle every year and ask newsreelers to send in either donations or prizes, and that results in a usually an hour and a half special every year. So we may at some point, if Newsreel would ever get to be a full-time job, we may very well look at doing more issues related to specific topics.
If I remember correctly, newsreelers tend to have a get-together at the ACB convention, is that right?
Yes.
So does that imply it's more of an ACB magazine than an NFB magazine?
No, I don't think so. There have been, in the past, I think some issues with NFB. I wasn't really involved in it, but I guess there were some problems at one time in announcing a newsreel get-together on the NFB, the floor of the convention. But Tony and Ed Ames, a couple of our very active members, are newsreel subscribers, and they actually do host a newsreel get-together at the NFB convention. So as far as I'm concerned, newsreel is essentially neutral as far as the organizations are concerned.
Right. We're speaking with Erwin Hodd, our remaining moments with him, so if you'd like to give us a call and discuss anything at all, then our number, 212-812-2800. That's 212-812-2800, and courtesy of spiderphone.com, you enter the PIN 0480-5512. That's 0480-5512. This program's going out live, 9 till 11 Eastern on Wednesday, 6 till 8 Pacific, and Thursday morning, 1 till 3, the good old universal time, which I've given up mentioning in exclusion because lots of people don't seem to be able to get their head around it. Tech support stories. I bet you've got a few good tech support stories. You may not be able to share any with us, but it must be an incredibly frustrating thing at times, as well as rewarding, I suppose, doing tech support, because what seems so abundantly clear to you just doesn't seem to click with someone else you're talking to.
Yeah, sometimes that's the case, although I'll have to say that overall I get a lot of satisfaction from doing the tech support. There are sometimes people who can be difficult to deal with, and there have been people who have just called in tears because their Braille and Speak has crashed and they've lost all their files. Sometimes we've been able to get them back, and sometimes we haven't. But overall, it's really been rewarding. And when I do tech support, I always try, if there's a problem to solve, I always try to help solve that problem and throw in a little additional information at the same time. I don't know. In another life, I could certainly see myself being a teacher. I enjoy sharing information with other people, and so I do that with tech support and also help out. So overall, I get a lot of satisfaction out of doing the tech support. Can't really think of any horror stories per se. I remember one lady who was on her cell phone on a train someplace, and we had to go through to, we had to initialize that her, I think it was a Braille light. And she didn't have a disk drive or anything else. Fortunately, she had flash. So we, I don't even remember now what the Braille light was doing, but we were actually able to copy the files temporarily from RAM to flash and then initialize the file system and then put her files back. And we ran into miscellaneous problems in doing that, but were able to get it done. I must have spent probably 45 minutes with her on the phone. And I remember that she was so happy afterwards to have not lost anything, because she was on her way to an important meeting where she needed all of her files. So that really made me feel good.
But you raise an important point, which is that the knowledge is obviously critical to have if you're going to be a tech support person, but you also have to be a communicator, and clearly you have both of those skills. You're a good verbal communicator and you have the knowledge, and that's a difficult mix sometimes to find in potential tech support people anywhere.
Yeah, I think it is, and it is difficult. One of the things that has frustrated me, and I suspect some of the tech support people is too, when Boise took over the TeleSensory line of products, when I get calls from tech support wanting help with a Braille Mate or an old VersePoint or something like that, that's something I typically cannot help with. The old VersePoint I've used two or three times over the years, but not enough to be able to give what I consider good advice on it, so I always have to refer those calls to somebody else. And in a way, I hate to do that simply because people want answers now and don't want to have to wait and talk to somebody else. But I would rather do that than try to give somebody an answer that isn't accurate or complete enough. And I think that's probably true with lots of tech support anywhere. It's difficult to be conversant with all of the products that a company offers.
I have no idea of knowing whether it was you who took this call, but I have a friend in New Zealand who is self-employed and has an office, etc. And one day, some horrible person saw the Braille speak on the counter in the office in the waiting room and thought it might be something that was saleable to somebody. So stole the Braille speak, when realizing what it actually was, that it was a blindness-specific product, dumped it down the lady's lavatory. And this woman who had gone to use the facility brought the soaking Braille speak back into the waiting room. And of course, you know, this is this guy's livelihood here, you know, the database of clients and everything. And luckily, Blazy were able to assist with a service contract, but that must be a pretty unusual one, a Braille speak literally going down the toilet.
Yeah, I think this is the first time I've heard of that. Of course, we've had people spill coffee, and I remember one lady spilled wine in her Braille light, and it not too funny at the time, but sort of later. Just as a side note, the real secret in that, if you're Braille speak or probably almost any other piece of electronic equipment gets wet, the first response, and I would probably do it too, is to turn it on. And that's the biggest mistake. If you leave it turned off, you stand at least more of a chance of getting it dried out and cleaned up. Because once you turn it on, it just makes a wonderful way to short things out. But it's just so instinctual. I would probably, if I dump something in my Braille speak, I'd probably just automatically turn on, see if it worked.
Do you have influence in terms of what gets accorded priority with software upgrades, you know, the flash ROM upgrades that we see every July, for instance?
There is a list of beta testers, and we share suggestions and ideas back and forth, and some of those are implemented and some of them aren't. I would say that overall the many, if not most, of the new features that have been added have come from users. So how much, I think there have probably been a few things that I've suggested that have been added. Most of them probably, I haven't been the only one for that matter, but so I think I have some influence, but I don't know how much.
Do you think that in the next little while, well, clearly, of course, you know, Dick Chandler has signaled on this station that there are big changes coming up. What do you think the future has in store for these sorts of products? I suppose particularly given that, you know, you've got a company now that owns a scanning product, a leading screen reader, and this line of note takers. The potential for some sort of merger of those technologies is potentially quite exciting for blind people.
Yeah, it certainly could be. What exactly will happen, I don't know. Certainly there is demand for something that at a minimum will get on the internet and do email. And with the demise of shell accounts, it's not that easy to get on and do email with the Braille and speaker, the blazing note takers anymore. With the demise of DOS-based, if you want to call it that, printers, at least that will operate in DOS, there'll be a time when current units won't be able to print very many printers, so that certainly has to be addressed. So I suspect that the new lines of note takers will almost have to be, if not Windows-based, certainly more Windows-like to accommodate peripherals, unless Blazy is actually going to come out with specific printers that will work, actually build specific printers that will work with their units, and that, to me, doesn't seem like that's a realistic thing to do. Much better to use a commercially available product. As much as I like the Blazy disk drive, you know, you're talking about a $500 product that works quite well, but if you can find a commercial product that will do the same or more at a lower price, I think that certainly has some big advantages.
PC disk is a step in the right direction in the sense that you can control the Braille lights from Windows Explorer as if it's another device in Windows. Is that actually out yet, or is it still being developed?
The WinDisk is still being developed. I've not heard a specific date on its release. I would hope it would be fairly soon. I know I have used HyperTerminal quite a bit to send data back and forth between the note takers and the computer, and that works fairly well, but I think that Blazy certainly does need something like WinDisk to make it much more transparent for the average user.
Yeah, I mean, we actually did a tutorial produced by a young man who had it just on main menu about how to use HyperTerminal, and I don't actually own a Blazy disk drive because I just use HyperTerminal to go to and from all the time. I guess, you know, it's going to be a pretty nifty interface, though, this WinDisk thing.
It does sound like it. As far as I'm concerned, the disk drive is wonderful for portable use, but if you're using a computer and don't need to carry data portably, I don't see any need to buy a disk drive.
Well, the hour's flown by, and I've really enjoyed it. There's so much that we've been able to talk about. And before we close, can you just tell us a bit about how much Newsreel costs and how often it comes out and how people can subscribe if they would like to pursue that?
Sure. It on a read and return subscription is, and all these are in U.S. funds, $30 a year. For $50 a year, you can keep any of the issues, and some people do, and some people go ahead and send the tapes back. And we actually do have going on right now an introductory membership for anybody who has not gotten Newsreel before. You can join for the first year for $20. It is 3 hours a month, and then we do some special issues, so they're typically 15 issues a year. One of the things that we hear is, gee, why is newsreel so expensive? And
oh, goodness me, I was going to ask you why is it so cheap.
Yeah. Well, and I think what happens is that people don't realize the number of issues and the number of hours. Dialogue, for example, I think is 4 issues a year, and I think it's, what, $28 a year, something like that. So we really do everything we can at Newsreel to keep the costs down. I think with Newsreel, in the very early days, I think it was a quarter an issue. You can get in touch with us several ways. Probably the easiest way, I can just give some phone numbers. The 614-469-0700 is the main Newsreel number. And we're there part-time, but you can certainly leave a message. You can also reach us on eVoice at Newsreel, which is 639-77335. We do have an 800 number, which is 888-723-8737. So you can reach us that way. Since we don't have a website yet, I've actually been using one of my email addresses for Newsreel, so you can get in touch with me via email. It's HOTT at GCFN is in Golf Charlie Foxtrot November, actually Greater Columbus Freenet .org. We take checks or money orders or Visa or MasterCard. Anybody who wants a sample issue can get in touch with us, and we'll be very happy to send out a sample issue on 4-track cassette.
And if you want a quicker sample, you can, of course, hear the half-hour sampler every month here on ACB Radio as well. That's excellent. Well, thank you for coming on the show. I really appreciate it, and keep up all the wonderful work.
No, thanks for inviting me. I appreciate the opportunity.
Okay, bye for now.
Bye.
That's Erwin Holland. That was really great to speak with him, and I hope you enjoyed the interview. This is ACB Radio Mainstream. It's the Blind Line program with Jonathan Mosen. It's nice to have you with us, and now we come to our open forum part of the program for the next 50 minutes or so. So if you'd like to speak about any topic at all, something that's been on your mind over the last week, then you can call area code 212-812-2800. That's area code 212-812-2800 in the United States. It's a free call from anywhere in the world if you use the right internet technology. And then enter the PIN 0480-5512. That's 0480-5512. And we'll be delighted to hear from you. Well, something that caught my attention over the last week was an article in a British newspaper that was being forwarded around the email lists about a man in his 80s, an elderly man who died in the street pretty much. He was walking to the local corner store and collapsed and died in the street after being taunted by boys aged between the ages of 12 and 14. A remarkably tragic story. For over 2 years, this man had been subjected to cruelty by these youngsters. And it is true that children of that age can be incredibly cruel at times. Perhaps many people who were schooled in the mainstream have experienced this, that you get to that age, the early teens, and there are people who get a kick out of provoking people who are unable to respond. And I suppose it's traumatizing enough for people who are young and fit and just happen to be blind, and they can find ways to deal with it, either by reporting it to the authorities or perhaps less wisely, taking things into their own hands. But this man in his 80s, finally after being tortured for 2 years, whenever he tried to make a public appearance, and by torture I mean things were deliberately put in his way, he would be verbally abused, things would be thrown at him, and eventually, after pleading with these youngsters to go away, he collapsed. What was interesting about this was that the coroner's inquest indicated some kind of heart condition that had resulted in this death, and that they were unable to establish conclusively any kind of link between the actions of the children and this elderly man's death. The man's daughter, herself in her 50s, has gone on record as being outraged and distraught, as you can well imagine, that these youngsters, without any kind of sense of moral scruples, let alone a common sense of respect for elders, seemingly caused this and have been let off scot-free. Remarkable story. And I was left wondering whether this was a fair decision on the part of the coroner. And I guess we don't have all the facts, and newspapers can put their own slants on an issue to get the angle that they want. But you can't help wondering whether justice was done in that case. And you can't help wondering how widespread that kind of abuse is. There is a lot of elder abuse that goes on anyway, but particularly blind people who cannot see the perpetrators of that abuse, who are old and frail, who are entitled to some sort of dignity and help in their old age. And I wonder whether you have a view on what we can do to educate people. I don't know whether it's symptomatic in some way of a social deterioration, that maybe we just don't have respect for people, and the fact that this guy is blind may well be irrelevant, that the people are being picked on all the time. But I suppose the fact that this man was blind really struck a chord with me, that I felt a particular affinity to this individual who was tormented and may not have been if it wasn't for his blindness. And I don't know what the answer is. Is it that somehow children are being parented appropriately? Is it a respect thing? Is it just boys will be boys and always have been? Does anyone care? If you'd like to share your thoughts on that, the number is 212-812-2800 in the US. That's 212-812-2800. And then into the PIN 0480-5512. That PIN again, 0480-5512. Maybe you want to share any experiences that you've had if you went to school in the mainstream, about how you coped with bullying, or wasn't it a problem? I don't know whether things are worse now than they were, and maybe you can comment on that. Perhaps you want to talk about a safer subject, and certainly a safer subject is that Windows Millennium is about to come out. And for the first time in quite a while, we have the opportunity to upgrade to that operating system on day one. If you're a WindowEyes 4.0 beta user, then you can do that. And if you're a JAWS for Windows 3.7 user, then you can do that. I don't know, but traditionally Synthavoice, who do WindowBridge, have been right on the button with support for new operating systems, so I would be surprised if you couldn't do that with WindowBridge as well. And a reminder that main menu has a Millennium Special coming up this Sunday night at 9 o'clock Eastern Time. That's 6 o'clock Pacific. and that's 1 o'clock on Monday morning, Universal Time, here on ACB Radio Mainstream. And you'll be able to tune into that either at that time or throughout the 24-hour cycle, and hear from a number of guests, which would include David Pullman, who privately beta-tested Millennium, Glenn Gordon, the Vice President, and I just can't remember the exact title that he has, but I will remember it in time for the program. He's an important man at Freedom Scientific. And Aaron Smith from GW Micro. And we hope that that will help answer the question, should you upgrade to Millennium or not? That is the question. I believe we have Mr. Matsura back on the line.
Yes, sir, Jonathan. You have struck a chord in me, and I generally don't... I try to make a habit of not calling back the same program twice in one night, but since I guess the walls were not shaking with callers, I felt I had to come in and say a couple of things. First of all, you kind of wanted to make a joke about whether it was safe to upgrade to Windows 2000 or not, but I don't think I'm going to go there. I think I'll be a good boy. And I'll stick to the article from the British newspaper that you opened with. Appalling and disconcerting are the two things that spring to my lips immediately. But I have to tell you that there is something about humanity. I don't think it's a blindness thing. I really don't think it's a anythingness thing. There is just something about humanity that we, as particularly as young children, are able to pick up on other people's weak points in a way that some adults just never get. They just never understand, you know, how it is that we could go there, or how it is that we could even consider making light of someone else's disadvantage, or you know, whatever you want to call it. But, oh man, I sure do remember as a child being subjected to it and watching other kids be subjected to it. You could be sitting on the ground minding your own business, and someone would come along, find you there, and go, oh, it's you, huh? Well, let's just see about that. Bing, bing, bang, bang, bang. And before you knew it, 10 guys were on top of you, beating the living daylights out of you, for no other reason that you could possibly imagine why. But there were kids I know who went through school living like this from day to day, and the best they could do was find places to hide where people couldn't find them. Even if they never said anything, for whatever reason, if you answered too quickly in class, you got it. If you were too good at something that the school bully wasn't very good at, you were a target. If you had a deformity or a defect that somebody couldn't possibly imagine how you could be alive and still have this deformity or defect, you got it. But it's kids in general. I don't think it has anything to do with blindness per se, because I saw it, the same type of thing go on when my brother was growing up, and my brother is 7.5 years younger than I am. I watched him go through it and unfortunately be a part of it in the regular public school that he went to. So, I don't know. What do you think of that?
At best, what do you think of that? People who behave this way must have a gross inconsideration for the feelings of others, and at worst, a hatred of them. And I wonder where that comes from, because surely it's not an instinctive thing in young people to behave that way.
No. And this is the part that scares me. Why would two people who are pretty much the same, and they have a very, they have a common ground, or let's go back to the blindness issue again. They have a common ground, they're both blind, they're both going to a school for the blind, they both have the same set of special needs, so pretty much they're equal. What is about one guy that just rubs the other guy the wrong way for whatever reason enough to incite violence of any kind, either verbal or physical?
Yeah, you ever read A Clockwork Orange?
Sure.
Yeah, when I read that book, I was in the sixth form, I think it was, which is like, you know, second to last year prior to leaving high school. And at the time, I guess I still had enough faith in human nature to, you know, dismiss it as a work of fiction. I mean, it was a very powerful story. But it's not really a work of fiction. It's like faction. It's like a the characters are fictitious, but the story is real. And that's really scary.
It really is. I wonder if I'm always asking this question: is more of it going on today, or is it the same amount of this kind of thing that's been going on, and we're just hearing about it more because of, as you would say, advances in communication?
Yeah. Do you have a gut feeling about that?
My gut feeling is that it's the same as it's always been. We're just hearing about it more. And most of my friends disagree with me, loudly and longly. They think that there's just more of it going on. I don't know. Having been in it when I was a kid, I suspect that it's really the same. It's just not being covered up anymore.
Of course, there are some things that were not said in that newspaper. I mean, I would love to know when the parents of those children found out that, at least arguably, if not proven an absolute fact, those children had been responsible for the manslaughter of that person, whether they were grounded, whether they had any sort of qualms at all about effectively killing that person, how it's affected them, whether it's affected them at all.
Good question. Very good question. And I suspect one to which we will never have the answer.
Yeah.
It's over thought, though, isn't it?
Well, I appreciate you giving us a call, and it'd be interesting to see whether anyone else is brave enough to come on and discuss those issues. Because
well,
it
I
is
hope
real.
There is, because well, this is one of the things that we've been discussing on an e-voice list that I belong to for the School for the Blind that I went to. This is just the type of thing we've been talking about lately. I hope other people hear it and call in.
Excellent. Well, I appreciate you getting the ball rolling for us, and have a lovely evening.
Yourself as well.
Okay. Bye-bye now. You're with Blindline on ACB Radio Mainstream. Hello, area code 559.
Hi, Dave here.
Hi, Dave. How are you?
Oh, pretty good. How about yourself?
Oh, mustn't complain.
Interesting, this discussion, because I believe that, especially since, maybe even since I went to school, and I'm so much older than you, John. I'm like 46. And
wow.
It's disgusting. I think that there has been a tremendous decrease in the respect for others that especially kids show. I wish I didn't have to say that, but it's unparalleled to me. The nasty comments. Pam was one time trying to cross one of our streets, and I hope she doesn't mind my saying this. Pam does not have the easiest time in the world getting from one street corner to the other. I mean, a lot of people do. Some people do, some don't.
Mm.
Somebody yell at her. Somebody said, hey, standing there won't get you anywhere, lady. I mean, come on, you know. And it's ugly. I don't know what to say. I don't know how to solve it. I wish I did. It's something that really needs some attention paid to it, but by whom and how? Certainly the right-wing religious of our community aren't they're not doing anything about it. If anything, they're trying to sweep us all under the rug. So, and that would be the only place I could see this sort of thing actually improving in is through religion, or at least what religious tenets teach. Hold on.
Hello?
Pam had saying something and I couldn't hear her.
Okay. Yes,
we'll
just wait and see if we can hear what Pam's saying there.
Oh, yeah, John, she had a phone in her hand. Pam had a phone in her hand when she was doing that street crossing. She had her cell phone in her hand, she was trying to make a telephone call. She was standing on, you know, where she was, trying to make a telephone call because she'd missed the bus. So it wasn't like she was just standing there either. I don't know. I don't know what to say.
I don't know. Is it that, you see, you know, these days you hear about a lot of blind people talking in schools to others, and as Steve rightly pointed out, it's not just a blindness thing. I mean, you hear about children doing atrocious things to innocent cats or other animals, you know, every year here when we have the 5th of November, which is the Guy Fawkes Night here, you hear about children putting fireworks in pet's ears and all sorts of dreadful things. So it's not just a blindness thing, but I suppose the fact that thing had happened.
Absolutely not. You know. Absolutely not. It's only that we happen to notice it more. But no, it's not only blindness. The respect I'm talking about, it cuts across all everything.
Well, interesting. We'll see if anyone has any answers, but I appreciate you sharing that with
us. One more thing that I have noticed, and this is related to blindness in a way. You know, in time past, it was a lot easier. People who don't drive just really don't fare well anymore in... unless you live in a place which has a lot of public transit, you're not going to. Very few times will you actually get a ride from point A to point B. I just think the whole thing is a deterioration. That, like I said, I'd like to say there was a solution to it, but anyway, Jonathan, enjoy the night. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Dave. Good to hear from you. Okay, ACB Radio Mainstream. Hi, this is Blindline. Hello there.
Oh, hi, Jonathan. I'm having a little trouble over here. I don't know if you're hearing me okay.
Yes, I can hear you fine, Richard. Yep.
Yeah. Well, what you were talking about struck a nerve with me, and I have a couple of experiences. One was abuse done by at the time I was a partly diagnosed, that the abuse to me was totally blind. He just picked me up and knocked me out and threw me against the wall, and it happened so fast I didn't know what hit me. And the other abuse I actually had was when I was younger, about 10 or 11 or so, we used to have this playground, and used to be on this merry-go-round, and I never knew who did it to me, even though at the time I could see. I could never see the person, but I couldn't get up the merry-go-round. They would but it was not allowing me to get off the merry-go-round. So, I agree with the last two callers that I don't think it's something new. I think it's something going on. We're just hearing about it more.
Perhaps it's a good thing that we're hearing about it more then, because at least if we confront it and accept that it's a problem, that's the first step to trying to deal with it in some kind of constructive way.
Right. Yeah. And like I say, when I woke up after it, I had to have my arm in a cast because he fractured my wrist. I guess I must have braced myself with my hand without realizing it. The reflex reaction. It has nothing. I don't think it had anything to do with just blindness. I think it's just in general.
Well, we're getting a bit of breakup here too, but I appreciate you sharing that with us, and we'll see what others think, and good to hear from you again.
Yeah, always good to hear from you, Jonathan. Another good program as usual.
Thank you very much, Richard. Have a good evening.
You too.
Okay, bye now. And this is ACB Radio Mainstream, and I believe this might be Dawn.
Yes, it is indeed. How are you, Jonathan?
I'm well. You're looking well.
Okay, I'm feeling quite well.
Yeah.
Chilling. It's nice and cool here. What I was calling about is that one of the ways I think that you address that kind of abuse, at least in a legal way, is to pass hate crime legislation that allows people to be prosecuted specifically for crimes of hatred, right, that are motivated by nothing other than someone's disability or race or gender or ethnicity.
Yeah, this was a debate that was raging in the US after some pretty horrific killing, I think, of a gay man from memory. Is that right?
Certainly, yep. And I believe it was Washington State, somewhere in the Pacific Northwest. There was a horrendous torturing and killing of a gay young man, Matthew Shepard. And then also, of course, in Texas, the Bird was the gentleman's last name. I don't remember his first name. Was basically drawn and quartered. I mean, he was dragged to his death. It was horrific because he was black. So the idea is, if you pass crimes that sort of specific, I mean, rather pass laws that specifically prosecute people for an intent to do harm, motivated only by someone's race or ethnicity or sexual orientation, then you can prosecute them in that way. But, you know, there are problems doing that too, because a lot of people say, then basically what you're doing is you're policing people's thoughts. You know what I mean? If, you know, scapegoatism has existed since time immemorial. I mean, the term scapegoat is biblical from, you know, who knows how long back. So people are always going to scapegoat others. I just don't know. I don't, you know, it's, again, can you legislate morality in that way?
Yes, I understand the motivation behind the idea that sort of legislation should be passed. I guess what concerns me is that, does the motivation for a killing, let's say, or a brutal attack, make a difference?
Exactly.
I mean, if I kill somebody because they ran off with my wife, more okay than killing them because of their sexual orientation or their disability? I think that both crimes are equally horrific, because in the end what you've done is you've deprived them of life irrespective of the motive.
Exactly, but, you know, unfortunately that becomes a very controversial issue. It's the same idea as why is rape a separate crime from any hideous, horrible assault and battery? Mm. You know what I'm saying?
Mm.
It, by separatizing it and sort of identifying it with a gender, right? Even though, you know, men are less likely to report being raped because it becomes stigmatized in that regard. So, you know, there are pros and cons, I think, to attaching specific animosity or specific fortitude, right, just to a certain crime. But by the same token, you know, I wonder whether you do more harm than good that way. The other interesting thing that, it's been this sort of an odd comment, but it makes me wonder if abuse against people with disabilities is on the rise. I mean, for years we all sort of knew that there was this kind of superstition that you shouldn't rob or mug or attack a disabled person, because it's like attacking, robbing a nun, you know. It's something you shouldn't do. It's, you know, consecrated ground. So, and if that's actually turned around now, and people, I mean, I think certainly people always saw us as easy targets, but if they're acting upon it more now, it almost seems to me that they see us more as people, as equal, right, capable of being abused. And, you know, I've always said that until we reach the status of really being hated, as long as we're still pitied, they don't really think of us in the same way as, you know, themselves. Once they start abusing us, then I sort of think, well, maybe, you know, maybe they think we're sort of the same as them.
I'm not sure. You see, I think you might be, I know the logic you're getting at, but I wonder whether you might be attributing a series of thought processes to a bunch of thugs who don't even think that deeply.
Right, a bunch of thugs, zigzag, I mean, precisely, you know. You know, you can intellectualize it all you want. I don't know what the answer to any of it is, but I just thought that certainly the issue of whether or not having them as hate crimes, you know, would be something to raise and pass on to possibly the next caller.
Yes, well, you know, if we could solve this problem between now and when the program finishes, we'd have a lot more listeners than we currently do, and there'd be all sorts of legislators and ethicists listening. But, you know, I just figure that there will come a time, hopefully, God willing, when, you know, I will be a 70 or 80 year old man trying to walk to the corner store to, you know, buy a few things. This is just a guy going about his business. A couple of guys, you know, 12, 14, torment him to death, and they get off. That's what amazes me, you know, they get off.
How old were these kids, too? Like 12, 13, right? I mean, that's the other big issue is, what do you do with something like that? It's like, how does that happen? That, you know, 11-year-olds are murdering, walking into schools and blowing people away. Mm-hmm. I mean, how is that happening? Like, this incident aside, what do we do about that problem? You know, what is happening to children? I don't understand where that's coming from. I mean, you know, beating up on kids and bullying them is one thing. Murdering people is something altogether different.
Yes, it is, and I don't understand whether it's that people are exposed to more, you know, I hate to sort of blame the demon TV for everything, but whether it's that people are so exposed to so many killings that they almost don't appreciate the reality of what a killing is.
I think that's a big piece of it. I think it's a great piece of it, you know. I think there's just too much in every form of media. There's just too much violence all over the place. And I think there's too much reality TV and reality violence. I think when you take reality and you make it entertainment, you sort of degrade life in a way, you know. I mean, not to sound... But on a certain level, you're objectifying life in such a way as saying it's just fodder for other people's entertainment. And you know, so, you know, that's the idea behind pornography, right, is that you objectify women as objects, and then therefore it's easier to rape, and it's easier to just treat them like trash because they become objects. Well, maybe we're just doing that to ourselves in general as a society.
Yeah, it's an interesting divergence that we're on here because, as you know, probably the ACB radio has an old-time radio channel. And I enjoy it. I enjoy the drama of it. It's like radio without TV without pictures, and a lot of it's very good. But, yeah, sometimes I listen to some of the crimes that are portrayed, even in some of that old-time radio, it's pretty graphic stuff. And I wonder whether that had a similar kind of effect.
It's theater, you know.
Is that the difference, you think?
It's different. Certainly. Certainly there's a difference between a snuff film and theater and art. You know what I'm saying? So I think that violence, I don't know, I think that fairy tale and make-believe violence is very different from what's depicted, you know, nowadays. And also now kids are encouraged to, like, really engage in violent, interactive games and whatnot, you know. Is PlayStation, is, you know, that stuff. It's incredible, some of that stuff.
Hey, it's hard to put that genie back in the bottle, though, Dawn.
No, I know. Well, exactly. That's... I mean, Albert Einstein may have thought he unleashed this demon on the world, but actually, look, it turned out to be technology, not the atom bomb, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, very lucid thoughts as always, and I appreciate you giving us a call.
Opening up some more worms. There you go.
Have a good
evening.
Talk
to you next week.
Okay.
You too.
Bye now. ACB Radio Mainstream, this is Blind Line. Hello to area code 732.
Hello, Jonathan. This is Corey.
Hi, Corey. How's it going?
All right. Well, I kind of wanted to give a younger perspective on this.
I'd really appreciate
possibly.
That.
Well, I'm in the mainstream classes, and I think what they're doing, I think they're trying to mainstream these disabilities kids more and more now.
Hmm.
You know, back a few years ago, many people went to school for the blind or you know, wherever they went, and I think they're starting to be more in the normal classes now. I luckily haven't gotten, you know, terrible things happen to me, but I do feel like an outcast a lot of times. And, you know, many people would be, have different interests, and, you know, they see me coming with all my equipment and paraphernalia with my laptop and everything. You know, I carry a lot of stuff around. And, you know, I feel like there's sort of a hush, you know, among them. You know, yeah, they probably have a lot of questions. And I think some of the teachers are recognizing that. And, in fact, they kind of asked me to do a presentation come this Friday. about, you know, some of the things that I do. And, you know, it might help, but, you know, who's going to get the benefit of that? You know, maybe 20 people are going to be in that class. But, you know, there's a whole world out there to talk to, you know.
You must have a bit of a dilemma in the sense that making that presentation kind of singles you out in a different way, doesn't it?
That's true. That's true. It kind of puts me in a situation where, you know, I'm a lot of the attention is being drawn to me. And, you know, but, I'm kind of getting used to it. You know, I like doing presentations. If it's something that I can help out with and possibly, maybe someone could benefit from it, you know, I feel like I'm doing something maybe worthwhile, you know.
Are you the only blind guy at your school?
There happens to be one other girl, but she went blind at the age of 8, and she still has a lot of different interests that I do.
Are you able to participate in, you know, the athletics things, the things that the kids are getting up to during recesses and things like that, just running around the place, mixing, or are you finding that you're kind of on the sidelines a bit?
Well, I think I could do that if I wanted to. I haven't really tried to get involved with that. I kind of more or less have my interest in other places right now. You know, when was the last time you've heard of people my age having interest in broadcasting and computers and things like that? And I think that's where we're left out some of the time.
Well, that's interesting, because one of the things that I would imagine people of your age are really big on is computers. And I know from my contact with you over the years that you know a lot about those. And I wondered whether that might be a way in, that you would clearly know a lot more about computers than a lot of your colleagues at school who are interested in the subject.
Yeah, probably. And, I don't know, maybe start a club or something. I'm not sure, you know. I'm not sure what the solution for that is, to maybe get involved a little bit more.
So, but what you seem to be saying, though, is that rather than being aggressive and cruel, the reaction you're getting is more kind of a standoffish reaction, that people just don't quite know
right.
How to react.
I think they're a little bit hesitant to approach the subject. You know, they probably don't know how to begin, and you know, I'll probably get a lot of really interesting basic questions. You know, I've gotten people who come up to me and ask me, you know, how I know when to sleep. You know, how I know when it's nighttime. And you know, it might seem like a really dumb question for a lot of blind people, but you know, I guess, you know, it's something that they don't have a lot of experience in. They, you know, they see the sunlight going down and they go to bed, you know.
But the fact that you know that is a really important step forward for you, because there are a lot of blind people, even who are not your age, who are kind of my age and older, who would react in a sarcastic way to that question, not actually seeing it from the other person's point of view, and saying, well, you know, they've never been blind. Sight is actually a really dominant sense, and so if you have it, it's hard to imagine often how people could possibly be functional without it. But the fact that you know that probably is a really important step to making some headway, I would have thought.
I would imagine, and that's probably one of the, you know, I'm probably patient, you know, I'm not sure, you know, maybe eventually sometime in my lifetime, maybe I'll get tired of answering these questions, but...
yeah, I'm sure you will. and yet when that happens, you know, sometimes it just pays, if people are asking it genuinely out of interest, it sometimes pays to just summon that last vestige of politeness from somewhere, even if you never thought you had it, because unfortunately, when you're any kind of minority, I think, you're kind of an ambassador for that minority, and it's unfair, and it shouldn't be that way, but it's the way things sometimes tend to be. And so if a blind guy gives a kind of sarcastic answer, it might just stop that person from being quite so inclined to offer some assistance when it's needed to someone
away.
Else. Yeah, exactly.
Right.
But I wish you luck with the presentation. You know, it's is this in the English class or something like that?
Yeah, it's for English. And
what do you think you'll say?
That's coming up on Friday. Huh?
What do you think you'll say in the presentation?
Well, I'm going to start off, you know, saying how I went blind, and I don't think I've ever told any of you that. I wasn't born that way. I've gotten, I got cancer at a very early age, and that's how I. They eventually had to take all the eyes out, and so that's how I went blind.
So you're a survivor.
Yeah, and you know, if they have any questions, you know, obviously I'll give them a chance to ask questions. Because I think that's one of the main things that they're interested in, you know, asking their questions, and you know, and maybe and then getting an intelligible answer for that also at the same time, you know.
The fact that you're willing to offer those intelligent answers is really something very significant, and it's very easy for me to say, but it does get better, and it will get better because of the way that you're dealing with it.
Yeah. I think what's also interesting is some of the teachers came up to me and they were asking, they were telling me, you know, I've been wanting to hear you do this because you know, there's some things I wanted to figure out. You know, there's some things that they don't even know about me, and so I think they're kind of looking forward to it also. And it's really kind of interesting that, you know, you could teach someone something that they couldn't really learn much of anywhere else, you know.
You might want to consider striking a bit of a balance, because obviously it's important to talk about the special techniques that blind people use to get things done. And obviously being blind has its challenges and can be a real pain sometimes. But, I don't know where we... okay. Well, I don't know where that noise is coming from. It doesn't sound very healthy, does it? Well, I'm sorry to lose Corey there. Let me just see if I can get rid of the noise for you. Okay, we've managed to get rid of the noise. Unfortunately, we've also dropped the connection, and it's probably not worth going through all the rigmarole of re-establishing it, because we're just about towards the end of the program. But I really appreciate Corey's call, and I'm sorry to have been cut off. If you tune back in, Corey, sorry about that. It's obviously MSN Messenger deciding that I've talked too long or something fatal like that. But I really wish you luck with the presentation, and hopefully you've tuned back in and you are tuned in for me to say that... give us a call back when you've done the presentation, if you would like to, because I'd be really keen to hear how you got on. And what I was going to say was that, you know, while being blind is a real pain sometimes and things, there are also things that are the same. And that if you can also kind of get a mix of saying to them that, you know, you're just a regular guy as well who is interested in computers and different things, and you may well be surprised. I mean, you know, the majority of broadcasters are sighted, and so there may well be some sighted people there who are just as keen on radio, and you just haven't discovered each other yet. So hang in there, and keep that fundamental faith in human nature, because despite what we've been talking about over the last little while, without that fundamental faith in human nature, I think we all become bitter and twisted, and somehow we've got to keep it all into perspective, don't we? And that is where I think we will leave it, folks. I'm pleased that that happened towards the end of the program anyway, and I've really appreciated those people who have shared their thoughts on a difficult subject, and particularly Corey, who whose call I really did enjoy hearing. And we're back next week, I believe, for another Blind Line. Just a reminder that coming up in the next ACB Radio Mainstream lot of programming, we've got InfoTech with Brian Hartchin. That's a great program. Or another good one too. They're all good. They're all good, aren't they? Faith Matters with Pastor David Andrews and Cecilia Lee is back at 1:30 Universal Time. At 2 o'clock, Marlena Lieberg is here with another wonderful Blind Spot show. And we'll have Trevor Radio as well. And of course, I completely forgot, and I mustn't do that, to tell you that Whole Note is on. So we actually start at 8 o'clock Eastern on Thursday night. That's 1 o'clock Universal on Friday morning. And that is the, that's 12 o'clock Universal on Friday morning. And that's the 3 hours of programming that we have. Jeremy's got a great show with Whole Note as well. And look who's come to rescue me to help me fill in 5 minutes. It's the Heidi Mosen with a hat on.
My hat.
Oh, is it? Is it Richard's hat? Are you both here?
No.
No, just Heidi.
Mommy.
Oh, what's this? Oh, yes, your head's very hot. Are you taking your hat off to say hello?
Yes.
It's very nice, because it's very polite to tip your hat when you come to say hello to somebody. Did you know that? That's what they used to do in the olden days. They'd tip their hat and say, nice to meet you.
That was only men.
Oh, well, I don't know. No. How are you, Heidi? That's good. You are getting ready to go to school soon, aren't you? Well, May next year. And so you're going to a special preschool kindy session where they train you to be a good school student. So that means that you go to kindy. Instead of going home at 12 o'clock, you go home at 2 o'clock. Is that right? On a Tuesday?
Yep.
Well, you're not saying very much. What else can you tell me? What did you do at kindy today?
It was Ashley.
It was what?
I was Ashley.
Oh, I'll play with Ashley. That's good. Yeah? Is she going to the special kindy with you?
Yes.
Well, that's good. That's good. Well, anything else to tell us?
Yes.
Yeah?
Papa's coming today.
He is. Papa's coming today, and that's very exciting. I'm going away for the weekend to do some work for Out of Sight, And he's going to do lots more work on our studio, isn't he?
Yeah.
He built a new room that's going to be the sound booth. He's coming back to put windows in. We've had the electricity on. All very exciting. How about a song? What's a song that you like singing?
Twinkle, twinkle.
Okay, off you go.
Twinkle, twinkle, little. I wonder what you are. Up at the future high, like a diamond in the sky. Twinkle, twinkle.
You ran out of steam.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, keep going. How I wonder what you are. Very good. Thank you very much for coming in and filling in some time on Blind Line. You're going to talk as well, Amanda?
Well, I've just got something that may be of interest to you.
Yes.
I went to this seminar when I was a teacher.
You should try and get closer to this.
I'll come closer to you.
That's better.
Yes. So no other man steals me, like who you're going to kill or whatever it was you were saying before.
It was a purely hypothetical situation.
Oh, I see. and it was on bullying.
Oh, yeah.
And I realise that blind people probably get a worse hit at it than most people, but it's certainly not uncommon amongst children who you can't really say for any particular reason are atypical. And
it's definitely not just a blindness thing.
No. Mm. And one of the interesting things that came out of it was that it's not only the bullies who you need to work with as a teacher or whatever, or as parents, to try and change their behaviour, which is deplorable, but also with the children who are being bullied. And you can often pick a child who's going to be bullied without even having seen them be bullied, because of certain ways that they react to things and just certain kind of personality traits to some extent. And you can actually train a child to some extent to not be the kind of kid who's going to end up being bullied. And I think maybe some of those skills that you can use are going to be maybe not quite as powerful if they've got something as strong as a physical or sensory disability to pick on, but you could probably still train blind people up with some of those skills that you train children up with to try and eliminate them being so easily bullied.
I mean, it sounds a bit sort of left-wing to me. I mean, why should you be putting the emphasis on the person who's actually likely to be bullied when surely the answer is to stop the person doing the bullying?
Yes, but at the same time, knowing that there are bullies out there and that you can't do everything, is it not better if you think your child's likely to be bullied, is it not better to help your child to stop them from being bullied in the first place, if you can, if there are skills you can teach that child?
I'm sure it is, as long as you don't ignore the perpetrator.
I didn't say you should ignore the perpetrator. You're putting words in my mouth that I didn't say.
There you go.
Yes.
Well, so what are the skills?
I can't remember anymore.
Oh.
But they're a lot to do with self-esteem and giving that child some understanding that the bully is probably a weak person, really not a strong person, even though they're coming across as a strong person, because if they believe that the bully is weak, then they're more likely to feel that they can stand up to the bully than if they believe that the bully is strong.
Interesting. Well, there you go. Maybe we can have a talk about this some more next week. Well, thank you for that very much. And that is it for Blind Line for this week. Thanks to all of you who've called in. Thanks to Erwin for an excellent first hour. And we will catch you back for Blind Line next week. I'm Jonathan Mosen, wishing you a pleasant week.